the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
Well, it is that time of the year where Medicare enrollment is now open. So what does that mean if you're turning age 65? What do you need to know? What do you need to do? And what if you are 65 and working at a company that has a healthcare plan? Does that change anything for you? Well, let's find out. Joining us on the program is Brian MacArthur from Bridlewood Insurance. And Brian, let's talk about open enrollment, which we're in now, when it begins, when it ends, and what are things that people that are turning 65 need to know?
Open enrollment is here. It's a version of organized chaos. Everybody who's on Medicare has the opportunity to review the Medicare plans that they have and make changes if those changes are deemed necessary in anticipation for 2021. The window opened on October 15, and it closes on December 7. So there's a lot to accomplish, typically, whether you're a Medicare beneficiary or Medicare insurance agent within a short period of time.
Now, when you say this open enrollment period that begins from October to December, Brian, what happens if you turn 65 in the middle of the year, like let's say in May? How does that work?
Right. So you would not need to worry about open enrollment for that. That would be an initial election period. There's codes that you put on the application, Jim, that dictate why we think the client's eligible to, you know, enroll in Medicare Part A or B or supplemental insurance. So if your birthday was in May, your initial election period would be focused around setting up Medicare to start May 1.
And let's talk about for those that are working in the private workforce or even public where they have a healthcare plan at the company or they may have one with the government. Let's contrast that to Medicare. What does it change? Because obviously Medicare operates a little differently than, let's say, if you have a company healthcare plan.
And then just to be clear, we're talking about somebody who is continuing to work as an active employee past their 65th birthday. Is that what you mean?
Correct.
Okay. So, you know, those people are in the driver's seat. What I find is starting at age 64, Jim, 1 year before everybody's eligible. Of course, everybody's eligible at 65 to enroll in Medicare. That does not mean everybody does enroll at 65, because to your point, if you're covered by an employer-sponsored health plan, in most cases, you can decide to enroll in Medicare entirely, if that makes sense, or you could continue on the on your employer-sponsored plan. So typically what happens, though, because the volume of mail that people receive starting at age 64, between age 64 and 65, is so abundant, and unfortunately, it's all based in scare tactics and, you know, threats of deadlines and penalties and consequences, that even if you know you're going to work past age 65, Jim, people still welcome an introduction to Medicare conversation at 64. And in that conversation, even if somebody was to explain to me, hey, I'm still working, I'm having fun working, I don't even know when I'm going to retire, it's still a time that they welcome having a complicated topic converted to something simpler. The end result for people who are going to continue to work is that I usually just say, hey, nobody can make you do anything. Let's look at what your life looks like as a covered employee on the employer health plan. What are the benefits that you get? How much do you contribute as an employee? We might speculate on how much the employer covers. And more often than not, Jim, the advice is typically that they should just stay on the employer-sponsored health insurance until they retire. There are some circumstances where it might make economic sense both to the employee and even the employer for the employee to voluntarily leave the company health plan. And sometimes it's to the benefit of everybody. But those are conversations that typically come up at age, you know, 64. And my goal is always to get the client to the point that the answer of what's best to them is, you know, is clear. I would say in most cases, Jim, the advice is usually to stay on the employer health coverage you know, but sometimes it's not.
Brian, let's talk about somebody that, let's say they've retired now, they're turning 65, they are applying for Medicare. Contrast what they need to know versus, let's say, when they were working and had an employer plan that might have had a small deductible and pretty much everything was covered. Contrast employer healthcare plans with Medicare and the difference.
Sure. So generally speaking, in almost every case, if somebody is moving from employer-sponsored coverage to Medicare, in most cases, their benefits get way better than they're used to, even if they're used to very good benefits through their employer. And the hard dollar costs of being on Medicare are way less. So that part probably sounds nice thus far, way better benefits at way lower cost. Now, the way better benefits part is nearly always true, just because Medicare is, you know, so much better than virtually any employer-sponsored plan that I come across. As far as it being less expensive, I would always tell people, take that with a grain of salt. As an employee, typically you pay a portion, maybe even a small portion of the real monthly cost for you to be on the plan. So if you indulge me in an example, Jim, you know, an employee might pay $200 a month out of their paycheck to be covered by their employer. Well, the employer, you know, might be paying another $800 behind the curtain to have that person on the plan. Medicare, when that person goes onto Medicare, Medicare could be as inexpensive as $148 a month, which has some really wonderful options at that price. And it could be as, you know, expensive as maybe $350 a month when we factor in their Medicare Part B premium and supplemental insurance and Part D drug plan premiums. But in real dollars in versus real dollars out, Medicare is very often way better coverage and way less expensive if we look at the real dollars being paid regardless of who's paying them.
And let's talk about something that you have with Medicare, and that is a Medicare supplemental insurance program. There's an alphabet soup of different programs, Brian. Right. And I wonder if you just cover some of the main ones and why it's important to pick up the aspects of Medicare that are not covered by the government.
Certainly. And to validate what you just said, Jim, I often joke around with people and say they keep Medicare, Jim, just complicated enough that I always know I'll have a job tomorrow, which is an awful thing to feel grateful for. But there it is. So the way I typically break down Medicare, and this will be a little bit crude, but it's in an effort to keep it simple, is really think of Medicare as four parts. I'm going to cheat a little bit. So for those of you who have, you know, the Medicare and You book in front of you, I'll confess where my little white lie lies. But it really comes down to checking four boxes. Think of it as A, B, C, and D. A and B comes from the government. C and D comes from insurance companies. So that nobody's head explodes. Of course, there's some supplemental options are called Part C, others are not. I cannot resist the temptation to alphabetize just for simplicity, so I'll call it all Part C. But Part A and B, Jim, covers about 80% of your medical bills and 0% of your medications. So when the guy on my side of the phone says, hey, Jim, Medicare is wonderful, you're going to love it. If the government gives you 80% of your health insurance, and they do that for a low monthly premium, which is almost always the case, Jim. That's kind of why no matter what you do for insurance, in order to cover the remaining 20% that the government does not and get you Part D drug coverage, there's a fork in the road. There's two ways people go. Jim, there's no villains in this story. All the options are wonderful. It's really just choosing the best version of wonderful for you. And you and I are big boys. We know there's no utopia. There's trade-offs. And I just try to lay out the trade-offs to people and to give them an opportunity to, you know, declare what's best for them. One way to address the 20% gap and to get prescription drug coverage would be a Medicare supplement or Medigap plan. You'd buy that in addition to a separate Part D drug plan policy. So you're buying two policies in that situation. The other way to do it is a Medicare Advantage plan, where you buy one policy to address Parts C and D. Again, it's not good versus bad. They're both pretty wonderful. Medicare supplement plans, Jim, feel like the sexiest PPO plans imaginable. If you could get excited enough to do cartwheels over health insurance, which I live it and breathe it every day, and I still cannot get quite that excited, it'd be over probably a Medicare supplement plan. It allows you to go see any doctor in the country who accepts original Medicare. What that really means, Jim, is 99% of doctors in the country you can go see without a referral. So thus far, it kind of sounds like a PPO. Medicare supplement plans, though, are actually even better than a PPO, because a PPO would also let you go see any doctor you want without a referral. But if that doctor is out of network, and if you went out of state, they almost certainly would be, you would pay more to see them. So while a true PPO allows you to go see anywhere you want, if you go out of network, you'll pay sometimes a lot more. So even though you can go out of network with a PPO, you usually try not to. A Medicare supplement plan is actually even better than a PPO because there are no networks, Jim. So, you know, if the best left toe orthopedist was the doctor who works on the Denver Broncos kicker's left toe, and that's who you want to work on your left toe, Jim, you can go to Denver, and that doctor will not cost you any more or less to see than the doctor nearby. So if your life depends on it, you literally go anywhere you want. To condense the options, I'll just go right to the bookend. The top option available enrolling today for Medicare supplement is called Plan G. Now, it's Plan G, Jim, not Part G. I'm going to call it Plan Great to get away from the letters for a moment. But for a nominal monthly premium, again, you go see any doctor in the country, no referrals, no networks, you have a $198 deductible. And with rare exception, Jim, unless that doctor or hospital charges for parking, you can pretty much show up empty-handed. So that's the Medicare supplement options. I'm going to give you a broad brush stroke just to give people a number to chew on. But at age 65 in most parts of the country, Plan G usually runs about $150 a month, and the Part D drug plan runs about another $30. So that'd be about $180 a month in addition to their Part B premiums. So that's the Medicare supplement universe. Medicare Advantage, very often, Jim, those have no monthly premiums, which is cheaper, right? That does not mean it's crummy coverage. It's actually magnificent coverage. At the same time, as a trade-off. The trade-off is that most Medicare Advantage plans, not all, are typically HMOs. So as long as you are okay with your primary doctor being your quarterback and referring you to the specialists or specialist groups that they've already performed due diligence on, it's a really wonderful option, and you get still pretty wonderful coverage, sometimes with no monthly premium.
And explain the difference between, let's say, getting something like Medigap G or going with Medicare Advantage.
Right. So it really just comes down largely to preference. So of course, with Medicare Supplement Plan G, you'll go see any doctor you want without a referral, no difference in cost to doctors. You know, we have a $198 deductible, and then barring rare exception, you likely won't see any bills for the rest of the year other than your medication copays. So it's kind of the ultimate flexibility. Most people would not need to be a health insurance expert to deduce that, you know, if you can go see any doctor in the country without a referral and barely see any bills, that's about as good as health insurance gets. So that's what life looks like on a Medicare supplement plan. But with Medicare Advantage, if it's an HMO, and most of the time they are, your primary doctor and the medical group that they're associated with are really your quarterback. Imagine looking right over the top of your primary doctor's head, if they were facing away from you, at the group of specialists and, you know, labs and hospitals that they have access to. And they are guiding you through their, you know, network of available providers. You do need referrals with an HMO. People villainize referrals, Jim, but my goodness, for the most part, unless it's really important not to, I don't know about you, but I'd rather try out the specialists who my primary doctor suggests and works with regularly, because in my mind, then you actually have a chance of your primary doctor and specialist being able to communicate more effortlessly. So you pay nothing for a Medicare Advantage plan, no monthly premium. You pay some copays as you go. The copays are really not cost prohibitive. They're quite modest, and people are happy to pay them, especially since they have no monthly premium. And then I know it sounds strange, but the Medicare Advantage plans, because of the way they're compensated from the government, even though they have no monthly premium, a lot of those have a lot of extra benefits that Medicare does not, you know, cover mandatorily. There's often vision benefits. Sometimes there's even dental benefits, which is usually a point of interest to most people. Free gym memberships, things like that.
And so one other aspect, and this gets back to Medigap insurance, one thing that happens, a lot of people retire, they start traveling, they go overseas. Talk about coverage overseas with Medigap insurance and why that's also important as well.
Great question. It comes up quite a bit. So Medicare supplement plans, for example, every plan G is from every insurance company, is obligated to cover some emergency hospitalization. So I'm going to explain this as the contract language is written, which would please any attorney who's listening. And I'll also convert it to reality as best as I understand reality, Jim. So if you were hospitalized overseas, the hospital would be very nice to you, and they could do something as drastic as quietly freeze your passport and say, we're going to take care of Jim, but he's not getting out of the country without paying this bill, right? At which point you would probably call your team at Financial Sense and have them wire, let's just say, $50,000 to the country you're in, pay the bill. At that point, you would submit that, let's just say, $50,000 bill to the insurance company who offers your Medicare supplement plan, and they, regardless of the insurance company, Jim, they would reimburse you 80 cents on the dollar, so $40,000 of the $50,000, less a $250 deductible, up to a lifetime max that's about $50,000. So it's actually a measurable enough benefit, Jim, that I have clients who do not buy extra travel insurance. So that is the way the language is written. Now, I have heard third-party stories that I'm not able to verify or certainly not put in writing, but I have heard that if you were hospitalized in a foreign country, let's just say it was a first world country, and the insurance company decided on their own that, hey, we're not terribly worried about, paying the bill for Jim in the United Kingdom, let's just say, that there are cases where they have paid the bill for you to avoid you having to pay it and get reimbursed. I would argue that if you're going canoeing in a country and that borders the Amazon River or something like that, you're probably going to have to pay that bill yourself and then get reimbursed. But I have heard situations of the insurance companies even paying the bill for you in country.
How does that contrast? Let's say if I'm working for a company, I have a healthcare plan, and I go to Europe and I get sick or I have a heart attack. And the reason I'm bringing this up, Brian, I had a client who took his kids to Europe. And while he was over there, his son-in-law had a heart attack, and it cost him. He had to shell out almost $30,000 out of his own pocket to cover the bills.
I'm sorry to hear that. With a Medicare supplement plan, I would have every expectation that obviously, I'm guessing his son-in-law was not on Medicare, but on a Medicare supplement plan, and in some cases, Medicare Advantage plans, although they're not obligated to offer international coverage, some choose to, but that would be covered and reimbursable under a Medicare supplement plan, like I said, up to the lifetime max.
So as we are now in the enrollment period, Brian, what are the important steps that our listeners should be aware of? Let's say they've turned 65 or turned 65 recently. What are the steps they should be taking?
I think the first thing is to do a bit of a self-assessment that do I feel relatively happy with what I have, right? If that answer is not yes, then an annual review would certainly make sense. And of course, we only have a 7-week window to do that. So I would encourage people to prioritize that. And, some of that might be that somebody started with a Medicare Advantage plan because it was appealing. It had no monthly premium, but perhaps access to the specialists they like have become prohibitive or laborious effort, or they just want to not be told where to go. So that would be one thing, is just do you feel comfortable with what you have? The other side would be, if you do feel comfortable with what you have, there each year, it's a very competitive space, especially in the Medicare Advantage industry, where Newer plans come out, and sometimes, you know, in an effort to capture market share, will offer benefits above and beyond what Medicare offers to try to, you know, woo people over to those plans. Now, a good example is that there's a Medicare Advantage plan, a major one that's available across the country, who are offering an annual dental allowance, sometimes above $1,000 a year. It's actually even better than dental insurance. It's literally usually attached to a plan that has no monthly premium. And you can go see any dentist in the country. If the you just pay the dentist what they ask, and then you submit it to the insurance company, and the insurance company will keep reimbursing you dollar for dollar in almost every case, up to, you know, it could be a $1,000 annual maximum, or $1,250 or $1,500. It's even better than dental insurance, because literally the first, let's just say, $1,000 you spend comes back to you. Normally, to get $1,000 out of an insurance company, you usually would need to spend $2,000, because most dental insurance pays, you know, half of major services. So dental seems to be a very hot topic. A lot of my clients are able to self-insure. So while I approach dental insurance with a very critical eye, in certain cases where that particular plan fits, it's literally sometimes, you know, a free $1,000 of dental. It works for some people and not for others. But I guess what I would really impress is that the space is becoming more competitive, and the consumer tends to benefit from that most. And even if you're happy with the Medicare plan that you have, which is very believable to me, because really all the options are pretty wonderful, it's just that we're kind of in this time, Jim, where the newer options that are coming out are, you know, in a lot of cases, even, you know, even more wonderful, right? So there's no bad options. There's just very good and very, very, very good options. And this would be the time of year to find out if you should be grateful for what you have, or if there's an opportunity to improve it and, you know, getting a benefit you may not expect.
All right. Well, listen, Brian, as we close, if our listeners would like to find out more about the kind of things that you do in Medicare planning, how can they do so, please?
Thank you for the opportunity to share this. So, Jim, I never tell anybody what to do. I just tell people what works best. This time of year, the very best way for us to connect would be to email me first. I reply very quickly with some instructions on how, where the client can has full autonomy to choose a day and time when they'd like me to call them. And I treat it like a sport to call everybody the exact minute they ask me to. So the best thing to do would be to email me first at brian@designmymedicare.com. My phone number, which I'm intentionally giving second because this is busy season, is 619-885-0556. I'm not above playing phone tag and being contacted by phone. But really what does work best this time of year would be if they emailed me first.
Well, listen, Brian, thanks so much for joining us on the program and keeping our listeners alert as to Medicare. Thanks so much.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.